Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Hey, man. Welcome to Idaho Sports Talk.
Okay, how's my Jamaican accent? You guys like that? I really can't say anything
else.
I liked it. No, it was good. It was good.
Spent a week there. See, that's why you said week, because I spent a week there. And that's about all I can come back with. I'm not, you know, not cool enough to talk with a whole show in a Jamaican accent.
No bobsled memorabilia?
Nope. I actually do have a bobsled t-shirt.
Oh, thank
you. I got a Jamaican bobsled t-shirt, so that's back at home.
Your
just for you, Fish.
Your trip was an A in my mind.
There we go. No Bob today. Chris and Fish. You got JP producing the show here on Idaho Sports Talk. And yes, it's been a week in Jamaica. That's why I wasn't on the show last week. It was fun. Couple things I learned. Family's crazy. But I didn't really learn that. Kind of knew that. But hey, we had like 20 people living basically in, you know, one house. It was kind of two villas, which were fantastic villas in Runaway Bay, Jamaica. So that was certainly a blast. A lot of these family members I haven't seen for at least 5 years. Besides like my brother, my mom, and my dad. This was the entire mom side of the family, which she was what, one of six. So there was a lot of people there, and they was all those, you know, siblings of my mom, they have kids, and it turned into a circus, which is fun. It's fun to go to the circus. It's fun to live at the circus for 6 or 7 days. Did a couple of trips, went to Negril, Jamaica for a day and a half. Ocho Rios, which is a place where there's a lot of shopping, and you get a real feel for the culture a bit. We climbed the waterfall, which I didn't know you could climb waterfalls, kind of.
Like in the water?
Or? Yeah, it was in the water. It was like a river that was flowing down. Not with the intensity that when you like drive up to McCall, you see like those rivers. There's no way you're going to like step in them and be able to climb up. But these were a little bit lighter, and you're literally going up a waterfall, and it was a challenge. You remember my ankle was hurt when I left?
Yeah.
That wasn't a fun time for my ankle, put it that way. Ankle ran into some problems there, but, you know, still enjoyed it. There was this lagoon that literally lights up on movement at night. So it, like, flashes to a lighter shade of blue in the night and movement. So, like, you can see the fish in there. They're, like, darting and everything. And then I jumped in, and when I move my hands, like, back and forth, you can see, like, a blue trail, like a, you know, a special effect in a movie.
Did you catch any of the fish?
No, I didn't catch any fish, which, you know, I didn't go fishing at all.
I thought you would become a master fisher here.
Camping, I caught, what, 11 fish
exactly.
At one time? But we didn't go fishing this trip. Maybe next time.
All right, I thought you'd show off to your family all the skills you learned in Idaho.
But, you know, speaking of fish, there was plenty of fish selection to eat because the people who were a part of the villa, there was like a staff that was able to cook and clean and everything, so they really hooked it up in a great way. So I want to say thanks to my family and everything for making that special. And one of the things that we did through the entire week there is we played some video games because these were people who, like, especially my cousins, I hadn't seen in, like, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And back in the day when we all got together, one of the things that we did is we played video games. And they're not as into sports video games as I am. You know me. I've talked about it on this show quite a bit. Madden, NBA 2K. I like to play FIFA. We haven't played a game of FIFA yet. We need to certainly do that at some point. But they're really into the Super Smash Brothers video game, which I can play. With the Nintendo GameCube, we were playing the Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Okay. I respect that. That's probably the best
that's
one.
That's the best one?
That's the best one.
Got your approval there.
Part approval. I need to know who you played, though.
Who I played as what character?
Yeah.
Falco.
Lost a little bit there.
Why? What's wrong with
using Because he's one of the best
Falco?
Characters. You got to use a challenge. That's like
okay,
using
so
the...
what's the level? They try to balance the game. What's considered a good character in that game? What's considered a bad character?
Oh, Fox, Falco, the fast movement characters are considered the best. And the big slow characters, Ganondorf, Captain Falcon, those are considered the worst.
Ah, Captain Falcon's fast, but yeah, my brother uses Donkey Kong, who's one of the big...
Yeah, no, so Donkey Kong definitely, that's more of a skill-based character. You were using the... Basically, you were like going into Madden and using the Falcons.
No. Well, the Falcons. How about like the Patriots? I wasn't using the Patriots, was I?
No, Fox would be the Patriots.
Okay. Now, what character do you use?
Bounce around. I like to use Pikachu.
Okay.
Throwing it back. But Donkey Kong's always a fun one. You grab him, run off the ledge with him, piss everyone off.
That's one of the cheap moves of the game. My brother, again, like to do that. But I brought up, you know, Super Smash Brothers to kind of mention one of the themes on the show that we're going to have Clinton Oldenburg, who's one of the designers for Madden 18. Madden 18 is about, what, a month away? A month away from coming out, so we'll get some of the information on the different features of the game. Of course, on this show, we've promoted a couple of Madden tournaments that we've had down at Dave & Buster's, which have been pretty fun times. So maybe on this show, we can get a little bit of insight, a lot of the behind the scenes on what goes into making the game, how you make it more realistic to what happens in the NFL, how difficult is it to design new features into it, and what are some of the big things for Madden 18? We're going to find that out in about 5 minutes from now.
I'm going to call it, it's called the GOAT Edition. It has Tom Brady on the cover. I'm going to change the title. It's called the Revenge Edition. It's the year Fish gets his revenge on Chris. 0-2 last year in both the tournaments. He whooped on me. It's revenge time.
Can't touch me. Even though the best shot you have is if we decide to play a game right after the release before I have a chance to exactly learn everything about the game. That's why I need to talk to Clint. Get the inside scoop on, what exactly can I use to get the upper hand on everybody else who tries to take me down as the heavy favorite each and every time that we have a Madden
tournament.
You're
not the heavy favorite when you have not won.
So I'm still advanced farther in the tournament than, somebody
like I believe
like
we
you.
Have an actual heavy favorite. Chris Lewis, that would be Titans Tomas.
Yeah, because the Titans actually look like a really skilled Madden team.
And he's
year.
Made the final both times.
Yeah, so he's... if it's not me, I will give the favorite status to him. But what is this? July 17th, 2017. Typically, every year on July 17th is when I reserve the new Madden. You know why?
Any particular reason why?
Because it's my birthday!
Oh, there you go.
So it's like, it used to be my parents' birthday gift to me. One of that was to reserve the new Madden that would come out about a month later. And now I try to do it for myself to get the new Madden game. Make sure you reserve it for, the month to come. But yeah, I'm hyped for it. And we're at that spot where you start to look ahead to the NFL season. And you start to decide, okay, I like this team in the NFC South to make a deep run. Or in the NFC East, will the Dallas Cowboys continue to impress? And will Dak Prescott make the leap to the next year? And will Ezekiel Elliott be suspended for the first couple of games? Or will he have another fantasy football season that wins people championships? And yeah, what part of the excitement of a new season coming around is, yes, you get to strategize how you want to play in the new Madden game.
Unless you're a true fan like me, and you just go in knowing you're going to play the Saints no matter how bad their roster looks.
You use the same team every single time. Well, luckily, for at least a good chunk of your life, you've had a good offense with them. But did you use them when Aaron Brooks was their quarterback?
No, because I was a Falcons fan back then. So I used Mike Vick.
You just use loyalty as your basis, your fundamental reason that you're a fan is loyalty. I stick with them no matter what. And then the Falcons and Saints are rivals. You can't be a fan of the Falcons and use loyalty as a reason and then switch to the
Saints.
But
I only use the Falcons. And then Michael Vick had his fall from grace, and I shifted over to the Saints, and they were 1-15. That was a difficult year to use the Saints, and then I stuck with them, Chris. Even like you, I'm playing the Steelers, Bills, Cardinals, Falcons.
Pick a team that fit your style. Come up with a style of play that you like to do. That's how you get good at the game. I'm telling you the secrets. Pick a style, and then pick a team that best fits a certain style. Like you like to run the ball. If you're a run-heavy team, pick those Titans. Be Titans Tomas. Run the ball a bunch. Use the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, and that monster offensive line. You like to throw the ball, pick a pass-happy team. But you don't have to stick with the Saints the whole time.
I like the loyalty.
Based on loyalty, but then say I was a Falcons fan, and I used the Falcons back in the day when they had Michael Vick, and I could run around a bunch.
The Saints do fit my style because I am terrible at defense on Madden. So it doesn't matter how good or bad the defense is, I know I'm not going to stop anybody.
Fair. KTIK is the proud sponsor of the finals night, Saturday, July 22nd at the Snake River Stampede at the Ford Idaho Center in Nampa. Tickets on sale now at ictickets.com. Get more information at snakeriverstampede.com. So what are the new features of this year's Madden? We'll find out with Clinton Oldenburg. That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Chris and Fish on Idaho Sports Talk today with Bob taking a long weekend. So, what? I just turned 26 today. Fish, you are?
23.
So, our combined age probably still fits us into the video
still doesn't
game
add
age.
Up to mine.
I know. I was going to say that, JP, but I just didn't want to make you feel that bad, because I'm going to have to put up with you quite a bit today, 3-6 as well. But yeah, with younger guys taking over, at least for today, video games, a topic on the show. We're excited for the new Madden. That comes out about a month from now. And I'm sure one of the designers and a former NFL player at that is excited for the game to come out. And that's Clint Oldenburg, who is one of the designers for Madden 18. Clint, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so at this point, like, how much of the game is done? How much do you still have to do? And like, what's the process like from July 17th to release date?
We are pretty much done. We are basically going through beta right now. We just got our beta candidate, and that means alpha's done. Alpha's our basically finaling time. We want to put all the finishing touches on the game. Once we hit beta, we're shutting her down, and we're getting them over to first party for certification so we can get it launched on time.
I know, Clint, now you said the game's basically done. What's your favorite new feature? What do you think fans are looking forward to most in Madden 18 when it releases?
Man, that's tough. There's three big ones, so I'm going to give you the three that I'm most excited about. The first is Frostbite. We have a new engine. We're on the Frostbite engine like we shipped FIFA last year. Battlefield has been on Frostbite for a few years. We're really excited about everything that brings us. We have a new story mode in Madden that we've never had before called Longshot. People are really excited about that. And then lastly, we have a new online cooperative team play mode called Mutt Squads, where you can jump on and play 3-on-3 with your friends.
Hmm. All right, so Frostbite engine, you mentioned that. I have no idea what a Frostbite engine is, and I'm kind of into video games. I know a lot of people are like, wait a minute, Frostbite, does that mean my players get cold? What's going on here?
Frostbite is our proprietary name of our engine. What that does is brings us a lot of new visuals. The game's going to look a lot better. It's going to be a lot more crisp. More so than that is we have all of our games now working on the same engine. And so you have people across all of the EA labels solving all the same problems instead of each team individually on their own engine. So you're going to see all of our games get better as a result of that.
Now, talking about the story mode, what exactly is kind of the point of long shot mode? And can you kind of give us a little preview of what it's going to look like for players when they start it up?
Yeah, Longshot is a story mode like nothing you've really ever seen before in a video game. You're going to play through the journey of our main character. His name is Devin Wade. And it's his path to the draft, starting from when he's a little kid up until the NFL draft. And you take him through his high school, his college, even some John Gruden-style quarterback camp, things like that. And it's his path. You're playing a movie based around football and Madden. It's teaching you about the game of football. It's teaching you about Madden, and it's also telling a really engaging and an emotional story about Devin Wade and the people in his life as he's trying to make the NFL.
Just because I like random questions, like, why did you guys pick the name Devin Wade? Like, I just was curious. Like, was there like a meeting? Like, what should we name this guy? And after 4 days of discussion, you guys decided on Devin Wade? Like, how does that come about?
I think it took more than 4 days. This story's been in production of about 3 years now. So it's been a long time coming. And we have a team of writers, people, you know, from Hollywood, from all over the country that have worked on this mode. And they're really excited to get it out. I'm not exactly sure how they landed on that name, but I'm sure they have very good reason.
Designer of Madden 18, Clint Oldenburg, joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. Former NFL player at that, too. So when you try to bring the elements of realism that you were familiar with playing the game and trying to put it into the video game, like, what are some of the challenges of like trying to make it realistic but playable at the same time?
That's a challenge I work with every day. So I'm a gameplay designer, so what my gig is everything that happens between the white lines from whistle to whistle. I work on everything that has to do with football. Like you said, the challenge is taking something that people watch on Sundays and go to the stadiums to watch and take that three-hour experience and condense that down into a 25, 30, 35-minute experience and take the most fun aspects of that because, number one, we want our games to be fun for everyone. So you want to take out, you know, people talk about they want a simulation experience or an authentic experience. We want to deliver that, but we want to make sure that we take out all the things that maybe aren't so fun, like commercial breaks and timeouts and things like that that make the games drag on. We want to pack all the punch that you guys love about football and deliver that to you on your couch in 25, 30 minutes.
Now, Clint, speaking about the gameplay, you were an offensive lineman, offensive tackle of the NFL. Offensive line is really the only position you don't have any control over when you're playing Madden. So what goes into making it so that the offensive line AI kind of responds in a realistic manner?
in the words of Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend. So I'm going to answer your question, but first, in Mutt Squads, our team play mode that I told you about, you can control offensive linemen now in the running game, and we actually have mechanics for you. There's a new blocking mechanic, so you can go for an impact block to try to pancake the guy, or you can cut block, and that's all on the right stick, just like hit stick on defense. So you can do that now until you're very happy, until your heart desires. You can play as a lineman, which is fantastic.
There you go.
Secondly, the AI, I work very closely with the AI of our offensive linemen. I think the biggest challenge is our little digital guys don't have brains, and the fans, our players, expect them to play and behave and react just like they see on Sundays on TV. And so the logic that we need to put in with our artificial intelligence has to be so deep and so detailed. It actually has to account for more in our game due to all the adjustments we allow, the hot routes and the audibles and everything that we allow our users to create in our game. We have to account for more than real-life NFL linemen have to do. And that is an ongoing process. We work on that every single year, and I think every year it's gotten better.
Now, how much when you, and we're joined by Clint Oldenburg, one of the designers for Madden 18, how much of like a new like cycle of Madden, a new year of Madden, how much of it is thinking of new features that you want to add in, like the story mode that you guys have come up with for this year, and how much of it is actually improving what is in between the lines, like what you said your job description is?
Well, if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say it's probably about 70-30, about 70% of our year is the new features, the things that we are most passionate about for that year's game. And then the other 30%, specifically when we get the alpha, like I had mentioned, alpha is our crunch time. That's when we're trying to get a beta candidate, and our alpha lasts about 4 months. And that's when we're working 60-hour weeks and doing everything we can to make the game better. That's when we do the most improvements from things that our community, our players, want to see year over year. There's always a certain list of things that they want improved from the previous game, and that's when we concentrate on that.
Now, Clint, I know a big thing for Madden, especially the videos, is we're letting the rookies know what their ratings are, showing the rookies. Last year we had two late-round rookies, Dak Prescott and Jordan Howard, really kind of blow up. Did that change how you guys rate late-round rookies so they're more playable at the start of the year, or do you still kind of rate them real low and let them blow up in real life first?
Yeah, that didn't really change. We still want to – basically, our philosophy is we want you to go out and prove it. And we've never, ever in the history of Madden had a player call us or talk to us on Twitter and be happy with their ratings. That's just how it is. No one is ever happy. They want to be faster. They want to be stronger. And that's how it is, and we're okay with that. And like you said, with Howard and Prescott, they were pretty low-rated coming into the game last year, just as any other rookie in their slot would have been. But because we do roster updates all season long, you show us, you know, what you got, you prove it week in and week out, you go up pretty quickly.
Are you somebody who has input on the ratings, and what is the process of coming up with ratings year after year?
So we have one guy here that does the ratings. His name is Dustin Smith, and that's his only job. He does the ratings. I do have a little input. We all here at Madden have a little input. We'll go to him with what we think is appropriate, and sometimes he'll appease us and do what we want him to, and sometimes he won't, but it's really his job, and he watches a lot of film, and he stays on top of the league, you know, more so than anyone I know. He's got access to all these different websites and all kinds of data, and he tries to make them as realistic as possible.
Clinton Oldenburg, former NFL player, now designer for Madden 18. Now, like, even ESPN has a lot of analysts. Like, Pro Football Focus still has, like, four or five people who are some of the main contributors for there, and they are, you know, evaluating players at the highest level. But Madden only has one guy in charge of all this.
Yeah, we have one guy, and like I said, we help him out, but he's one of the best. He knows what he's doing. Most importantly for us is making the game play how we want it to play. So there may be Pro Football Focus has a grade on a certain guy, and ESPN talks about the guy in a certain aspect, but we need to have our ratings match the formulas the way they work in our game, and we want the stats to be as realistic as possible. So that's what's most important, is making the game fun and making the game play that the way it needs to play to be fun and balanced.
Now, Clint, I'm sure you probably already tested the game a little bit, but when the game releases, what is the one thing you're looking forward to the most? Is it the Mutt Squad? Is it the story mode? What are you looking forward to most playing when Madden 18 launches?
I'm personally looking most forward to Mutt Squads. We haven't been able to play with our friends on Madden since Madden 25, which is about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. the last time we had supported online team play. And it's just been a blast. We've play tested it. We've taken it around to shows. We had EA Play out in Los Angeles in June, and everyone has loved it. Everyone that's come across us has been playing it, raving reviews. People have a lot of fun, and they're engaging with Madden in a different way. Normally, you go in one-on-one, and it's a sweaty. You're locked in, and you're trying to out-strategize your opponent, and it's focused, and you're stressed out when you're done playing. This is a different way to play. You're with your friends. You're having fun. You're trying to scheme up and do fun things and get the ball in everyone's hands. It's a completely different experience. I'm really looking forward to it.
I will say, you did sum up my Madden playing experience pretty good there with that stressfulness and trying to out-scheme the opponent. So before I let you go, the question that I have, and I know I'm in the minority with this, and I don't even know if you were part of the team when this feature was there, but I loved the vision cone. I thought that was a fantastic feature back in Madden, was it 2006? And it's gone away because apparently people weren't good enough at like reading defenses and like changing your vision cone to highlight receivers. But I thought that added an element of realism, yet wasn't too difficult. So how do you judge the feedback for something like that? Because clearly the feedback was that this thing had to go, and it hasn't come back since.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So again, I have a two-part answer for you. First, we actually implemented a feature very similar to that this year. It's a new gameplay mechanic called target passing. And it's not quite the vision cone, but what it does is you can use a modifier, it's left trigger, and you can bring up a target on the field. And you can move that target anywhere you want, to any receiver that you want, and place the ball at that exact location. And you can actually use that against your opponent to look off the coverage. So you can show it over to the left and then swing it over to the right real quick and throw it. Or you can even bluff it over to the left, turn it off, and then throw it to the right. So we are bringing that idea back. But as you mentioned, the vision cone was definitely the most controversial feature that we'd ever put in Madden. And there was a select few hardcore, and it sounds like you're part of that group that loved it. They thought it was ultra realistic and thought that it was the way that the game should have been going. But on the other side, there was a large cohort of our community that thought it was completely too hardcore and took the fun away from Madden and didn't, and ended up turning it off. And so that's what I was talking about earlier, where you have to balance realism and fun and make sure that people are engaging with the game and want to keep engaging with the game as this Madden season continues. But with that specifically, we always revisit. We take the feedback on both sides, and it came to fruition this year. We were able to come up with something that we think matches the expectations of both sides, and there's something like that back in the game.
Now you said like the Madden community, you got the feedback from that. Where do you look to get that feedback?
Primarily social media. We also have a Game Changer program, so you can hit up myself on Twitter. I'm at Clint Oldenburg. You can also hit up at Rex Dixon. He's our creative director. We have a number of people on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, Twitch, even all of that. We're all over that. Game Changer program, those guys are the people we bring in to play the game a couple times before it launches. They give us feedback, and they're also responsible for getting out into the public and talking to people and giving us the feedback from them.
Now, Clint, I know Madden 18 is just about to hit stores, but what's the timeline look like for Madden 19? Do you guys start as soon as Madden 18 releases? Is there kind of a break while the NFL season's going on? What's the timeline for the next Madden game being developed?
Man, there's no break. Actually, as I sit here at my desk talking to you, I am already working on that. As we speak, it's begun. We started about 2 weeks ago.
Jeez, no breaks at all. So we'll let you go. Have fun playing Madden 19. Meanwhile, we'll be playing Madden 18. So
yeah,
have fun
looking
with that.
Forward to it. Madden launches August 25th, and please, everyone go out and get your hands on it and give us your feedback.
Of course I will. Again, that's Clint Oldenburg, Madden 18 designer. We appreciate the time. Again, he played it. He played in the NFL, so he has that unique perspective on how to put in the realistic elements, but you don't want to make it too hard for the people out there because, oh no, your video game is hard. That's the worst thing in the world, right? Like, my life is hard. I don't want to turn on my Xbox and my PlayStation and have that be hard too. So I can see the complaints. Call 424-9300 right now. Be the ninth caller to win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get Beef O'Brady's. Get to their spot, Northwest Corner, Overland and Eagle, to score lunch or dinner. Beefs for business lunches, sports watch parties, or for friends and family. An award-winning menu, huge video wall, big screen TVs await. JP approved as well, and he'll be the one picking up the phone. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian. Good food, good sports. Again, 424-9300, the ninth caller. Up next, it's a sports update, including, oh, of course, Fish had to put in LeVar Ball. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update brought to you by the Owyhee Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise the newest urban-inspired spot in town. The Owyhee Tavern Steak and Sea at 11th and Main. Want to send congratulations out to James Worrell. He was the winner of our Beef O'Brady's gift card today. Another chance tomorrow. Boise State senior wide receiver Cedric Wilson was named to his first postseason award watch list today, a candidate for the Paul Hornung Award. That's given to the most versatile player in college football. Last year, he had 56 catches, 1,129 yards, and 11 touchdowns. He was named a Mountain West Honorable Mention. The Biletnikoff Award a watch list will come out tomorrow. I would assume that he would be on that one as well.
Now, when
that's
it
just an assumption on my part.
All right, JP's analysis, though. We're in this for the JP analysis. Go ahead. Break down the whole Boise State team. Why don't you? Right now. But Wilson, for the Hornig versatility, he can catch. He can run when he gets it if they wanted to do reverses and things with him. Kick returning. Punt returning, I guess, is what we saw him stress last. And he can return kicks, too. But mainly, he can throw. He opens up the opportunity for trick plays. It was always fun with him and Spurbeck because they were both, you know, quarterbacks back in the day, and they both had the ability to throw on these double passes. That's ultimate Boise State offense, the double pass.
They have a watch list for everything at this point.
Do they have the best fans watch
list? I was going to say, at this point, do we have best fan watch list, best field watch list?
Boise State wins both of those. Best field, it's blue. Best fan base, of course. Look at me.
That's
sucking
it?
Up to the fans.
Okay, my question for you, 1,129 yards, 11 touchdowns last year. How many this year for Sed Wilson?
How many yards was it?
1,129.
Good 1,300.
1,300. Wow. That would have been my guess. Maybe 15 touchdowns.
Yeah, I was saying for touchdowns, can he get to 18? Like, who? How many touchdowns do you think Rippon's going to throw?
32.
If it's 32, what percentage of them are Cedric Wilson touchdowns? Because I'm looking at all these other people.
Well, at least two-thirds. That'd be 16.
I think he's throwing 30. Half is 15, and that's a pretty good number. I mean, I would think it's, 15 to 18 is what I would go with, because who else do you think is going to be catching these touchdown passes?
He's going to be the main target. Let's
maybe some of these tight ends can get at something in the red zone, and they can get some touchdown numbers.
Well, Boise State's Marta Hermida earned an FIBA gold medal yesterday as Spain's U-20 national team beat Slovenia 73-63 to win the FIBA U-20 Women's European Championship in Portugal. During the tournament, she appeared in three games.
So congratulations to her, Jai Rodriguez, who was another Boise State player, now I guess former player from Spain, did a similar thing a few years ago, able to capture a championship there. So it's always fun for them to get the experience. The thing you always worry about is, okay, how much basketball is too much basketball, to the point where like you're kind of worn down when everybody else is fresh at the beginning of the year, and how do you manage that as a coach? But there's still plenty of time before the season gets going, but it is sneaking up on it.
Well, here's your LeVar Ball update, Fish. How many days have you gone without a LeVar Ball? What's the record?
I think it's two. Because
two?
I won the weekend.
Okay. Well, he's talking smack again. He says in a pickup game of 2-on-2, his son LaMelo against Shaquille O'Neal and his son Sharif, they would win. Sharif and LaMelo both committed to Pac-12 schools. Sharif going to Arizona and LaMelo UCLA. But somebody told LeVar that somebody was talking some smack.
All right, so what's the
here we go. Hold on.
All right, we got it?
Oh, no.
So that means I got to buy some time?
Here we go.
You can take LaMelo?
Yeah.
Stop it. Hey, me and Melo against him and Shaq, we'll kill him.
Vince, that's your boy.
He's so full of crap, it's not even funny.
I reached out to LeVar. He's losing my trust. I reached out to him on Twitter. My friend's got a wedding coming up in a month. I said, LeVar, I need to be a big baller at this wedding. Can you ship me some ZO2s early for this wedding? And he hasn't replied yet.
What about him says that you're going to give away something for free?
I'll pay for it. I just need it early. I don't want to
wait
till November.
You're not going to buy $500
pair of shoes. Since when do you make the money to buy a $500 pair of shoes?
Me and my buddy, we had an agreement. We said if LeVar will ship them early, we'll both buy it and wear it to the wedding.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not going to buy it if it ships in November, but if he can tell me, Fish, I got you by August, I'll buy them and I'll wear them. I'll wear them around the station. I'll school you in them, Chris, the whole nine yards.
Do they even exist yet?
Not besides the one that Lonzo Ball doesn't wear.
Now, that's the thing. Like, we're supposed to buy into this, even though Lonzo, like, I'm not one. I know it's become a thing to track the Lonzo Ball shoes on all these summer league games. I haven't really been up with each and every shoe that he's been wearing. I mean, you know, in Jamaica, I wasn't paying attention to Lonzo Ball shoes.
He's not that global,
if I'm wrong,
yet.
But
he's not big in Jamaica.
Yeah, he's not quite the hit attraction. He has not overtaken the beach as a form of entertainment in Jamaica and some of the other things that they do in Jamaica that they do on the beach too. But why should I have confidence in his shoes if he doesn't have confidence in his shoes?
Exactly. Well, Shaq actually spouted back on Instagram. He says, if LaVar Ball beats me, I'll super glue this wig. He was a picture of him with a wig on my head forever. Wake up, bro. I made more free throws in a game than the points you averaged, 2.2 a game.
Shaq doesn't play. LaVar Ball's out here to joke. I don't think Shaq's out here to joke.
What would you rather see, this 2-on-2 matchup or the 1-on-1 LaVar Michael Jordan matchup?
Oh.
I don't need to see two old guys play basketball.
Well, there's two young guys at least.
Let me get the 2-on-2 because at least I get some young guys in there. Not everybody out here is pulling a hammy. Although Lonzo pulled a calf muscle the other day, and he ain't playing. Or maybe he will. I don't know. We'll see.
And finally, to give you your LaVar Ball fix, Fish, while Lonzo Ball is dazzled in the Summer League with a couple of triple-doubles and leading players with 9.3 assists per game, his shot has been off, shooting only 35%, 20% from three. LaVar, in a recent radio interview, was, of course, not too concerned about his son's shot.
Oh, ain't nobody tinkering with his shot. He gonna shoot the same way, comfortable. Like I said, who cares about his shot? Here's the thing. He missed a lot of shots in the first few games. They act like the percentage is gonna stay there. He'll go about 4 or 5 games where he go 4 for 5, 6 for 8. So it's not a big deal, and it will come out to a percentage where he's always been, in the high 40s.
Depending on which shoes he's wearing.
Because that always is the indicator, right? Just because you shot 40% from three-point in high school and 40% from three-point in college, that means you'll shoot 40% in the NBA with a longer three-point line and quicker athletes defending. There's something called trends. Does your skill set translate from one level to the next? And Lonzo Ball, one of the things that you could make a case is that when you have that slingshot type of motion, when you're playing against NBA caliber athletes and in the summer league, you're not playing NBA basketball. That's really summer league. You're getting the best players from college, but it's so unstructured that it really doesn't even feel like at the level of college basketball. But there's a case to be made that that shot will be a struggle in the NBA.
So worst case, he's Chris Paul, a point guard who can dish it out to his teammates that can't shoot. I'm not concerned about that.
Chris Paul's 10 times the athlete of Lonzo Ball. Like, I'm high on Lonzo Ball as a basketball player. I like him. But to say he's Chris Paul, CP3 is a lot shorter, but he is an explosive athlete.
He can
get
by you.
Can't
shoot from threes.
Look at them. Chris Paul's one of the best three-point shooter point guards that there is. Look at the numbers.
2K's lied to me because I can never make threes with him.
Good release, too. It's up over his head like it's supposed to be. Idaho Sports Talk with Kays and Prater on location this week. Burger and Brew on State Street Thursday. Tailgate Sports Bar and Grill at the entrance to Ann Morrison Park off Capitol on Friday. Both days, the boys are live from 3 to 6. Join them. Good excuse to hit the bar. Up next, Quick Hits, Fish and I. We tackle four topics, rapid-fire fashion, including, by far and away, the biggest letdown in sports over the weekend. I put out my frustration next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Well, no Bob, because his weekends continue to extend. Although, what am I saying? I wasn't here last week. I was in Jamaica, so I can't really complain.
I think I need the vacation now.
Michael Fisher is in Bob's place. And Fish, who is Abraham Almonte? And what did he do this weekend that not even Aaron Judge has done this
year? He's an outfielder for the Cleveland Indians, and despite being swept in a three-game series by the Oakland A's, he had probably the alleged highlight of the weekend. Bottom of the ninth, losing 7-2, he hit a 505-foot home run.
Wow.
Off some Oakland A's reliever, according to StatCast. Not Aaron Judge has a long home run this year, 496 yards. I watched the video. It doesn't even look close to 505 feet. But apparently he hit the first 500-foot home run of the year that wasn't in a home run derby.
Now, I saw a video of this home run, too. It was in Oakland. when the ball went out the ballpark, you saw like the big wide like stands, because when you hit a ball that far and high in the air, you're going to go to a wide shot and you're going to see a lot of the seats in the stadium. You saw a lot of seats in the stadium in Oakland. You didn't see a lot of people in them.
No.
I think that was the most concerning thing about that home run, was that, oh my goodness, did it highlight how few people actually watch Oakland A's games at the stadium? I still think the most exciting thing that's happened to the A's, and I know we have a couple of A's fans who are in this building over here at Cumulus, I think the most entertaining thing that's happened at an A's game is when Draymond Green was suspended for the NBA Finals game and he had to hang out in the booth of the Oakland A's game right next door and watch it. Like, that was exciting. The A's themselves have not been.
Can he play for the A's in his offseason?
Why not, right? It's better than sending out pictures of his you-know-what in the offseason when he did last year.
If you want the advanced stats, 109 exit velocity, 97-foot peak, 505 feet.
What's your biggest peak? I don't know how you answer that question, so just move
Topic
on.
Number two.
Yes, I set it up for awkwardness.
All right, Chris, what was the biggest letdown in sports this weekend?
It was the big three rolling through Philadelphia. You know, the three-on-three Ice Cube League.
Oh, yeah. Iverson, right? Back at his hometown.
That's Iverson in it. It was Iverson versus Dr. J's team. They set it up for the Philadelphia showdown. You know, Dr. J ain't going to play because he's kind of old.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's still a legend, though, so you have him there. And then Allen Iverson, he's a player coach. What is the first thing in player coach?
Player.
Yes.
So he just didn't get 50, right? He got like 45?
Yeah, no, he actually put up a grand total of zero.
Oh.
Because he didn't play.
Oh.
How do you not play, Allen Iverson? I know you're probably old and you're probably hurt, but what are you being saved for? Like, I don't care if you like have to go out there in a wheelchair like Paul Pierce in the NBA Finals in 2010. Like, you still got to do it, right?
Yeah.
You still got to go out there and at least, you know, try to play and try his crossover, step back. And if you roll your ankle in the process, too bad. You did it for the Philadelphia fans. Like, you're not playing in an NBA. You're not saving yourself for the NBA season. Like in Summer League, when somebody gets hurt, like, okay, this doesn't matter. This is Summer League. We save you for the regular season. This was the grand event in the Big Three. Iverson's your biggest star that this league has, right?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's other guys in it, but Iverson's the biggest attraction. We know Iverson doesn't, he's not in game shape anymore. He kind of looks overweight and everything, but we get it. But he's rolling through Philly. This was supposed to be the thing. Iverson back in the Wells Fargo Center balling, but he didn't play. So it was a disappointment.
Maybe he's saving himself. Steven Jackson of the Big Three said that their best 10 players could beat an NBA team. So maybe we got
in what?
An NBA game.
I think they could maybe win a game of 2K. I don't think they're going to win a real game of
maybe
basketball.
Maybe he's saving himself
unless
for that.
Unless they all pull a hamstring and, you know, quit while they're up 2-0.
Topic number three.
Why is this Monday the best Monday ever? Well, you know, other than the fact that it's my birthday.
Yeah, see, that wasn't even part of the thing when I wrote this. The real reason is, tonight at 7 p.m., I get to take some money from one JP, finally cashing in on my U.S. Open victory with Brooks Koepka, drafting for the British Open. So that is why it's the best Monday ever, because I get to take JP's hard-earned cash that he's making right now and just put it in my pocket, wait until next Sunday, and then brag to them all again that I win the British Open.
You wanted to make sure you got this in because when we start on Thursday with the British Open, you don't know how much longer your bragging rights can last. So you, these next 3 days, you need to make sure you get in as much stunting as possible because you might get your money taken. Although, do we have the draft yet? When's the draft take place for the British Open?
Tonight.
Tonight, when I get my money.
So, who has first? When's the order decided?
At the draft.
So you guys can't plan. Do you have a big board?
Yeah, I have a big board. I don't know if JP has a big board.
I have a big board.
Are you guys?
I have two big boards.
Do you need? Do we need? I forget how this works. You pick three, right? Four.
Eight.
Eight. Oh my God! You got to do a lot.
Eight,
of
but then you get your top four pick. So
I see. Now, am I going to get any of you to reveal anything about your big boards, or is this way too competitive for us to announce anything over the radio?
My big board is better than Fish's big board.
I will say my current big board at the top, former British Open champion, is right now the number one pick after some inside scouting. I won't say who, JP probably knows, but that's at the top of my big board.
I gotta say, I'm leaning towards Fish just because I made fun of him last time after he picked Brooks Koepka.
I need you to make fun of me more.
Doggone thing. So I'm not going to make that same mistake twice.
Topic number four.
All right, Chris, what woman made sports history this weekend?
Stacey Piagno. She earned a win in a baseball game, a professional baseball game, becoming just a third person since third woman since 1950 to do so. Won it for a team that plays in a league in California. I forgot the name of the team. I had it written down, but can't find it. But, hey, congratulations to her being able to do it, which lends you to think if she's able to compete at this level, which is like one of the independent baseball leagues, who's to say that somebody can't get good enough to one day do a Tim Tebow? Get some opportunities in the lower levels of the minor leagues for a professional.
I need to correct you there. Succeed and in the lower levels of the minor league,
I
like
mean,
Tim
if
Tebow.
If Tim Tebow can do it, why can't Stacy Piagno? And is Stacy Piagno more of a attraction than Tim Tebow? Like, I think that's more of a novelty. Tim Tebow looks like all these other baseball players. Stacy Piagno doesn't look like all these other baseball players out there.
I'm assuming
and she's effective. She went 0-2 last year with an ERA of 9 in the 8 games that she played, and she was able to pick up a win and a start this year that her team won for Sonoma, 16-1. I would be more willing to watch her pitch in a minor league baseball game than I would to watch Tim Tebow play in a baseball game.
All right, what would you rather see? LeVar Ball, Michael Jordan, first basket wins.
How come it always goes back to LeVar Ball with you?
Or her versus Tim Tebow, bases loaded, two outs.
Her versus Tim Tebow, bases loaded, two outs. Because I'm going to see Tim Tebow go down swinging. Be fantastic. Can't wait for it. Set it up, Fish. Do it. You got some pull around here. Would you want your favorite player to compete in the Home Run Derby? Well, Aaron Judge fans might be having regrets. He put on a show, but was it worth what was coming next? That next on I Know Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. It's Chris and Fish today. I think we get along a little bit better than Dwight Howard and some of the people that tweet at him. A little bit.
Dwight Howard, really anyone ever since he met with Kobe Bryant.
Kobe ruined his career. Got on the wrong side of the Kobe Bryant stands. The Kobe Bryant stands will never forgive the time that Kobe Bryant called him soft. And it's like, all right, since Kobe said he's soft, Dwight Howard must be soft. And let's all make fun of Dwight Howard every time he gets passed around. And don't mention that to Dwight Howard on his Twitter feed, though. Just a little recommendation for you, because he will clap back. Bob with a long weekend, so he's not here. JP is the one producing today. I'm on Twitter at Chris Lewis Tweet, Fish at the Fish KTIK, the station at KTIK 93.1 FM. Home Run Derby was last week. I didn't get a chance to watch. I was by a beach in Jamaica.
Oh, man, your life's so rough.
I know. Ooh. It was really tough for me to miss out on. Well, it looked like it was fun, though. I want to make fun of the Home Run Derby. Like, it wasn't a fun event. Aaron Judge went nuts.
There were some issues I had with the event, but it was a good event.
What issues did you have?
Well, Justin Bour hit the second most home runs in the first round and got eliminated.
Yeah, that's true, because if you face the wrong guy, the bracket format. That's
exactly.
Speaking of bracket format, coming up in about 10 minutes from now, we'll do our own bracket of dominant athletes, thanks to Mr. Roger Federer doing a thing right around my birthday once again. But the bracket format can be cruel like that, and your boy Giancarlo Stanton didn't last very long either.
Yeah, thanks to the MLB rigging the bracket so that he would face Sanchez in the first round.
Rigging it to face one of the worst guys?
Every single year, guy with the most home runs faces the guys with the least home runs. Aaron Judge mysteriously got the 2 seed. But that's not the issue I have. The issue I have is with every single person around this time of year, and I'll even call out one of my friends who believes this as well, that says the Home Run Derby, it jinxes players. It makes them worse. They alter their swings. They can hit the ball out of the park. I actually had a buddy playing some fantasy baseball, Chris, which you and I are both in a fantasy baseball league.
Indeed.
And one of the guys said, I'm looking to trade Cody Bellinger. My friends, you think I should lowball him since he's in the Home Run Derby? Maybe he'll think he's going to slump? And I was like, what are you talking about? He's not going to slump. Cody Bellinger, by the way, hit for the cycle already. But Aaron Judge, he won the Home Run Derby. Spectacular show. 47 total home runs. Played 4 games, doubleheader over the weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
1 of 18, 6 strikeouts, batting .055 right now. That's not good.
Yeah. He actually had a home run rod by Jackie Bradley Jr.
True.
Yesterday. So he could have been two for 18 with one home run if it wasn't for Jackie Bradley Jr. Pulling one back at the triangle at Fenway Park. Now, you know, I don't know where this started. Like, can we point to an origin of the Home Run Derby curse? Like, is it just for people who won it? Is it for participants?
I need to
understand the curse for me to attack its validity, because all the research points to, and the 538's done a study, ESPN has done a separate study from that, and has pointed to the fact that there is no such thing as this home run derby curse, where the players who are in the home run derby, they hit fewer home runs or their swing is jacked up. I think it's something to push the narrative against something that's fun.
Yeah. Now,
I want fun. I want home run derby. I want people participating in it. And I don't want some kind of myth thrown out there about, oh, you're going to mess yourself up for the second half of the season. Because what it's going to do is stop the best players from participating in the home run derby. So we need to spread the facts about this more than we need to spread the myths.
Now, I believe there was some legitimacy to this argument.
Based on what?
On the old format. Where you had 10 outs, so you were sort of changing your swing because you only had 10 swings, really. Now you have 5 minutes, 4 minutes, plus a bonus. So you don't have, you know, you can't just wait on a perfect pitch. So I think now it's even less, but you're right. If this argument was true, wouldn't we see people not participating in the three-point contest because, oh, it's going to jack up my three-point shot?
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing. I'm shooting three-pointers. It's more timed. I've got to get them faster because you never shoot 30 three-pointers in a minute in the NBA. It's more timed. I've got to get them out faster. That's never even the argument.
Correct.
The bigger argument is you're going to get hurt in the slam dunk contest.
And, like, have we ever seen, like, when's the last time we've seen somebody get hurt in a slam dunk contest? I mean, it's happened before, but we haven't seen it in a long time. Where if you were getting hurt in a slam dunk contest, you're probably too old to be in the slam dunk contest anyway. Like, oh, man, stop trying to dunk out here. Like me, I injured my ankle. But then again, I was 23 years old when I injured my ankle.
Yeah.
So
and you've almost
was,
recovered, almost,
yeah,
basically.
Almost, except then I rolled my ankle again last week, and that were a couple of weeks ago, and that wasn't good. Now, you know, the three-point shootout one is a very good argument. And I think with the home run derby, the time format is actually more – isn't that more exhausting?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like than the 10 swings one, because you could actually pace yourself with the 10 swings one if you wanted to. With the clock on you, you only have one timeout to stop it. They usually do it around a minute left. Now, as somebody who's, you know, been around a baseball team, covered a baseball team on a day-to-day basis – if you really do think a batting practice session where you try to hit home runs messes up your swing, you don't spend enough time around baseball because a season's 162 games long. It really turns into a marathon. And to break it up, at some point you need to have fun at batting practice. And sometimes, you know, whether it's once a month, once every couple of months, once a week, teams will have, all right, just, you know, have fun at batting practice today and just do whatever you want. So if you wanted to just work on hitting the other way instead of going through each cycle that every player has, or just try to hit as much home runs as possible, do that one day for a batting practice. And that doesn't mess them up for the rest of the season if they have that one day in BP where they're just allowed to not do the three and four bunts and then try to spray the other way. And they just, let's hit home runs today. And they're not jacked up for the rest of the season. So what the home run derby is basically a timed batting practice. It's a little bit faster. They're professional athletes. They're Major League Baseball players. One, and the numbers will point this out, one round of speed BP where you try to hit home runs is not having a lasting impact on you.
Exactly, and the home run derby falls on the Major League Baseball bye week. And I know there's always this statistic in the NFL. Andy Reid was, 13-0 coming off a bye week or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're giving the best teams, the best scouts, and the best pitching coaches 4 days to say, all right, Aaron Judge can't hit a slider low in the zone. Let's just throw it there. Because during the season, you're like, well, all right, Aaron Judge, but we're playing the Red Sox tonight, and I got to focus on Jackie Bradley Jr., and then we're playing the Twins tomorrow, and I've got to do Miguel Sano. You don't give them enough time. You give them a whole week to say, all right, who's the best hitter in baseball? Aaron Judge? Where can I throw the ball to him? All right, pitchers, here's where you're going to throw the ball to him every time.
Yeah, that argument I don't buy.
You don't buy that people are just scouting him better?
No, because with baseball, you have this information. You don't need 4 days to come up with it. There's scouting services. You know, each individual team has their own. And like, I can figure out right now, and I don't need 4 days. I can go online and look up the hot and cold zones of Aaron Judge, what he does with a certain pitch, what he doesn't do with a certain pitch. Like, you don't need an all-star break to determine that. Like, I understand it for, like, having an off-season of, you know, adjustments or whatever. But, like, once you get to a certain sample size, it isn't, like, the time off that you need to determine, okay, what this guy can do and what this guy can't do. It's having a large enough sample size to draw conclusions. Like, I saw this a lot with Ryan Howard when, in the beginning of his career, he was crushing home runs left and right. He had, a season where he hit 58 of them. But eventually, the sample size got large enough where the breaking ball low and away, he just couldn't really do anything with it. So what happened is he eventually got a lot of breaking balls low and away, and as the swing slowed down, he really couldn't do anything with that.
And the
sample
shift was
size, yeah, and the shift also killed his career too. But sample size is more of a thing that if you really wanted to say, okay, the home run derby, the young up and comer who just bursted onto the scene and hit 20 home runs in the first half of the year, why didn't he have as big of a second half? Well, you can explain that with sample size.
Yeah.
Okay, as he started to get more breaking balls at a certain spot, we learned that he couldn't hit those, so then he got more of those breaking balls at a certain spot. So I don't think it's your theory of, okay, days off. I just think it would be, all right, do we have Jock Peterson, for example, was your recent example of this with the Dodgers, where he was in the home run derby. I think he did okay in it, and then he had a really bad second half of the year then. That wasn't because he participated in the home run derby that messed him up. It was that people learned where his hot spots were, where his cold spots were, and that's why he dropped off.
I think the other problem is that baseball's not doesn't balance the season. I know we say first half, second half, but in the first half they play 90 games. So when Aaron Judge only hits 20 home runs, everyone say, what happened? He hit 30 in the first half. Shouldn't he have hit 30 in the second half? No, the season's now 20 games shorter.
Yeah.
You can't expect him to put up the same sample size in 20 games. I did some research. Ironically enough, it's 50-50 right now. Four players. It is the winner and the runner-up, if that one says anything to you. Aaron Judge, we said 1 for 18. Miguel Sano, the runner-up, 1 for 10. And then my two Marlins, Giancarlo Stanton, 1 for 10. Justin Bour, 2 for 9. Everybody else hitting at least their average, two guys over 300. Cody Bellinger hit for the cycle.
By the way, cycle is the most overrated achievement in sports. Unrelated to this.
What? I love the cycle. The cycle is one of the most, it's one of the luckiest things in sports, but it's not the most overrated.
A three home run game and a single is a more valuable game than a 4-for-4 with a cycle.
Oh, yeah, but how often would someone go 4-for-4 with three home runs?
Still, are two home runs and two doubles more valuable than a cycle?
Depends on how many runs he scores.
Because how many bases, like total bases is more valuable
Total base is a terrible stat. Because if I get a single and then somebody hits me in, that's just as valuable as a solo home run.
Not exactly.
Yeah, we both scored one run.
No, home run is still more valuable because you produced a run yourself. That's slugging percentage, man. Do I need to explain to you?
I understand how it works, but as long as a run scores for my team, I don't care how it happens. You can hit a guy and he can score, and that's if a guy goes 0-for-0 with being hit.
This dude is just trying to make the argument that a single is just as valuable as a home run.
As long as someone drives you
in. Oh, my goodness.
As long as that run total is the same, they're both as valuable, Chris.
Somebody take his ability to talk baseball away. That was bad. Come on, man. You can't come out here saying a single and a home run are the same thing.
Nah. Just ask the A's. It works. Get on base. Get them in.
Roger Federer. He's smarter enough about baseball, and I'm sure about tennis, too. He won a Wimbledon title around my birthday, which, again, made me go back and design a bracket of the most dominant athletes that I've been able to see in 26 years of living. So if we have a bracket, we have to advance it. We pick the bracket next on the ticket. Idaho Sports Talk with Chris and Fish. Yes, Fish on this side, not producing. JP is with Bob, taking a long weekend. I think he's in San Diego. Went to a baseball game. Madison Bumgarner pitched.
They finally lost, though, didn't they?
Have they been good lately?
They had been 2-0 at games he'd went to, and he was going to two more. So his argument was going to be, if they win these next two, I'm going to tell the Giants, you need to send me to every game.
Oh, you know, just for the Giants' sake, right?
Yeah, for the Giants' sake.
The fact that Bob wants to go to every game and wants free season
tickets. But if they're
tickets.
Undefeated when Bob's there, we all know baseball's a game of habit.
My question is, if Bob got free season tickets to the Giants, home and road games, would he just give up the show and just do that? Like, he might.
I don't know how he would afford travel, but yeah, he probably would.
The Giants included the travel.
Oh yeah, then yes, we'd never see Bob again.
Why would he
need to work? Bob would work. No, Bob would work during the off season when there's nothing to do in baseball.
There you go. All right, so when he has time to fill in his schedule after checking out the Giants and all these games, just how happy he would be. I can just see the smile on his face right now, almost as big as the smile on Roger Federer's face when he won again at Wimbledon. Was he? 8th time winning at Wimbledon, 19th time winning a Grand Slam championship. At the age of 35, he won this thing without dropping his sets.
I'm impressed he didn't get hurt and have to retire like half the Wimbledon field.
Yeah, it's, you know, kind of. Didn't you see that one video of the person who got hurt and they didn't like bring out any medical attention to them? Like, what was up?
They
with
were
that?
Probably busy on another court the way everyone else was getting hurt.
They're just watching somebody else get hurt and try to. Hey, this person here is yelling and screaming for help. Federer doesn't need any help. He's dominated tennis in my lifetime. Like, today is my 26th birthday. 26 years watching sports, I have to put him on the short list of most dominant athletes in their game. You look at his first one, what was it, back in 2003 where he won Wimbledon. From 2003 to 2017, I mean, you're talking a 14, 15-year run in tennis where typically you have a high peak, but it's not a long peak when the athletes, you know. We're still talking about Nadal, though, who's somebody who really parallel with this timeline. You know, Djokovic and Murray are somewhat new compared to what Roger Federer has done. But so I designed a bracket. I had to, because I needed to figure this out, because he's won so much around my birthday that I need to figure this out. Who is the most dominant athlete of my lifetime? So I designed a bracket of eight. And let's go down the list, one versus the other. And you can help me with this because you're around the same.
I've seen this bracket. There's some issues here, but I'll approve of most of them.
And if we have a tiebreak, I guess JP could be our tiebreaker here. And we can determine who, in my 26 years of watching sports, has been the most dominant. So first on the list, with Roger Federer, I put him in it right away, against Floyd Mayweather. All right, you can put Floyd Mayweather in here because he hasn't lost, 49-0. Now, his fights aren't entertaining.
No, not at all. No, they're not even dominating. You don't dominate a sport when every fight's decided by the judges.
He doesn't knock a lot of people out.
No.
He doesn't have, you know, brick hands that make you fall down, but he scores really well. I'm no boxing expert, and I'm, of course, not a tennis expert either, but I think Roger Federer's run of dominance and the amount of, like, the people that he's beating along the way makes me go Federer over Mayweather because... Like, while Mayweather, in a couple of different weight classes, has shown that he is the supreme boxer, it's not like he's out here, like, doing the run that Ali had against all the guys that he's had, or Tyson, when Tyson was in his prime, fighting a lot of high-profile guys. I just don't think so very highly of a lot of the people that Mayweather has beaten. So I'm going Federer.
I mean, Mayweather's record would be the same as Federer and whoever he's playing. They said, all right, play for 3 hours, and then we're going to pick... us judges based on who had better serves, who had the better volley. If you're not knocking people out, you're not dominant. I think that's part of the reason boxing's dying, so I'll go with Federer.
All right, so we agree there. Next two, squaring off, Tom Brady. Tom Brady in his 12 times being at the Pro Bowl, 5-time Super Bowl champion, 4-time Super Bowl MVP. He's led the league in touchdowns 4 times. He made the All-Decade team, former Comeback Player of the Year, 2-time MVP. So you got Tom Brady against another Bay Area guy, except, you know, he actually played in the Bay Area. It's in Barry Bonds, who made the All-Star team 14 times, 8 times a Gold Glove Award winner, 7 times win the NL MVP award, 2-time batting champion, 2-time home run leader, and yes, he may have used steroids, but in the process hit 70-plus home runs.
See, so this really comes down to how do you weigh in the steroid impact on his dominance? Because if you just ignore the steroids, I think this is Barry Bonds by a long shot because of what he did. If you say, all right, we need to factor in the steroids, then it's Tom Brady. So, Chris, you made the bracket. How are we viewing steroids?
No, you can view him however you want to.
Well, how are you viewing
him? I'm really not looking at it from the steroid perspective. I'm almost eliminating them.
I guarantee you wouldn't be dominant if he didn't have steroids. Look at what his body looked like before.
Well, look at what he did before it was alleged that he took steroids. Now, he wasn't this dominant where
he just stole a bunch of bases. He stole a bunch of bases.
No, he could hit two. I guess two was a hitting machine before steroids have ever became a thing. I mean, 298 career average, and a good chunk of his career was before 2001. When the, you know, his head exploded. So I'm going to go Barry Bonds here because there's no baseball player that had came close to doing what Barry Bonds did. I, as cool as Tom Brady has been during this run, Peyton Manning was always there to compare him to, right?
Yeah.
Like, Peyton Manning was always the guy in the conversation, who do you want, Manning versus Brady? Now, Brady separated himself over the last few years with having the longevity on the back end of his career, still playing at a high level to where I put him above Peyton Manning clearly now. But man, Barry Bonds, I've never, like, and again, maybe you don't want to see baseball like that. And maybe it was an atrocity that somebody took steroids to break all the records that we held so sacred in the game. But boy, as a kid watching baseball, that was mad fun. So I'm going Barry Bonds.
I got to go Tom Brady. He actually won a championship. Bonds made one World Series. I'm sorry, you can't be dominant if you're not winning championships. So I got to go Tom Brady, five of them.
So we need a tie break. JP, what we got?
Tom Brady cheated less than Barry Bonds, so I'm going with Tom Brady.
Forgot the Deflategate and everything. So Brady has an asterisk, right? Dad, man, all right, I lose that one. So Federer versus Brady next round. Let's go to the bottom of this bracket. LeBron James. We've run through his resume quite a bit when the NBA Finals were around, but just a refresher, four-time MVP, 13-time All-Star, three-time champion, All-NBA first team 11 times, AP Athlete of the Year a couple of times. Versus Tiger Woods. Talk about a high peak, but then a far drop-off. He won the Masters in 97, 2001, 2002, 2005, 14 major championships, but nothing, not a zip since 2008, the U.S. Open. So when we come to dominance, my 26 years of watching sports, LeBron versus Tiger, who are you moving on?
LeBron, because he's never lost to a guy by the name of Y.E. Yang.
He lost to the 2011 Dallas Mavericks, though.
And Dirk's
that might have been the Y.E. Yang of the NBA.
Maybe, but they had Dirk still, who's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I go LeBron. Like, if Tiger Woods kept up his pace at somewhat of a level after 2008, I would easily go Tiger Woods here.
That's not fair, though.
But he
How old is LeBron James right now?
LeBron is 32.
Okay. Tiger Woods, 7-8 years ago, was 32. So you're comparing what he did from 32 to 40, what LeBron has done up to this point in his career.
I'm talking about their whole careers. I've seen both of these guys, their whole careers. And I think LeBron James is I think he's the best basketball player ever, but he's one of the three best. Is Tiger Woods, golf expert, JP, one of the three best golfers of all time?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
he's going
back. You think he's number two? Yes. Really? Is that a hot take, or is that the general consensus? Because I still think a lot of people said he was on pace to do that, but he fell off and dropped off, so you put a lot of those guys in the prior era ahead of him still.
He's the second best golfer of all time and the greatest golfer
in this generation. I agree with that. The best golfer in this generation. LeBron James is
more dominant than LeBron James has been. Come on.
Up until Y.E. Yang happened, I'd agree with you. But then Y.E. Yang took down the most powerful man.
I was at that tournament.
So it's your fault.
JP's fault.
2009 PGA Championship, Y.E. Yang.
LeBron, I have. All right, going to the bottom of this. And now here's where the ultimate hot takes come in, right? So I'm going to go Serena Williams as one participant in here. Serena has completely destroyed women's tennis, not destroyed it as in like ruined it, but destroyed it as in has destroyed all the competition against Gino Auriemma.
When
we're talking dominance, Gino Auriemma's in this.
It does
right?
say, well, one, it says athlete, so
I call it the Chris's that, birthday bracket of ballers.
Threw that out. Well, no, I'm sorry, you can't pick Gino Auriemma. He's playing in a sport where there's like six teams that are good. Because there's only 50 top recruits as opposed to college basketball for the men's side, where there's 150. There's two coaches, if we want to stick with a coach, that are better than him, more dominant.
So Belichick, you want to put?
I didn't even have Belichick. Belichick I thought about, but I stayed in college. Pete Carroll or Nick Saban?
All right, Nick Saban I can see. Pete Carroll, no.
Well, Pete Carroll, what, he won three championships at USC, and he's now made the Seattle Seahawks a dynasty?
I will allow you to replace Geno with an athlete. I will not allow you to do it with a coach.
Do so I have to pick it from a different sport, though? Because you had one from each sport. The other sport I had would be baseball. You had a hitter. I had a pitcher.
Okay, so put your pitcher.
Roger Clemens.
Okay. Now, because of his Cy Young Award winners?
Four Cy Youngs after the age of 30, 150 wins after the age of 30, which is really when I started watching. 354 wins, seven Cy Youngs. Pitched for every single team in the AL East at one point.
Gotcha.
So that's why I would have him in there.
All right. Serena Williams in her Grand Slam titles, what is it? Wimbledon, 2, 3. Yeah, just a lot. I'm not even going to count all these up. I'm still going to go with Serena Williams because what she has done from being having the target on her back, really, the second that she arrived, I guess, shared it with Venus, to overtaking Venus and still being the best, winning a tournament when she was pregnant, to kind of just top this all off.
I was going to say,
Serena Williams.
I would have thrown an asterisk in here because winning a tournament while pregnant, no one of the others on this list will ever do that. And that, like, puts you in your own special category.
Fair.
I think that needs to be recognized. I think she is more dominant than Roger, so I'll advance Serena as well. But we do need to say, if you win a tournament while you're pregnant, that's no one else on this list will ever do that.
Okay, so that might make her the favorite on
but that,
the final
that's like
four.
A special asterisk case, though, because if that doesn't happen, maybe she doesn't advance. So maybe we need, like, a special champion.
All right, Federer, Brady, LeBron, Serena, the final four. Now, I didn't put Jordan in here because Jordan's entire career doesn't fit my timeline of the last
I never saw
years.
Jordan play.
His
so.
Career was before, like, started before 1991.
Yeah.
So that's why. Well, although you could say Barry Bonds' career started before 1991.
I took this into me that I was able to see them play during their dominance.
All right. Fair. So we'll do the final four coming up closer to 3 o'clock. Join Idaho Sports Talk with Kaiser Prater on location this week. Burger and Brew on State Street Thursday and the Tailgate Sports Bar and Grill at the entrance to Ann Morrison Park off Capitol on Friday. Both days, the boys are live from 3 to 6, so join them. Good excuse to hit the bar. Up next, it's a sports update, including some NFL news. A GM fired in the month of July? Why could that be the case? That next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update brought to you by the Owyhee Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise at the newest urban-inspired spot in town. It's the Owyhee Tavern Steak and Sea at 11th and Main. I'm sorry, Fish. I am going LeVar Ball free in this sports update. I am boycotting LeVar Ball in this sports update.
I feel like there's a better way. You could have gone, we're going ball-less this sports update. LeVar Ball-less. I'm just more upset about the delivery there, JP, but I'll allow it.
Dang, man. He's going to break out the
You'll
whip.
You'll allow it?
I'll allow it.
The ruler is like that Catholic school teacher with the ruler.
How about we talk about Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, reportedly involved in a bar incident Sunday night, although no arrests were made. Details a little bit sketchy at this point. However, what we do know, a 30-year-old man said he was physically assaulted but could not identify who assaulted him. The man was taken to a hospital, non-life-threatening injuries. An NFL official, though, told ESPN the league is aware of the situation involving Elliott and they are looking into it.
Which means the NFL will mess it up 4 months from now, right?
Four months, but 2 years. They're still investigating him from the domestic violence incident before he was even in the NFL.
True. But they are expected to come down with some sort of ruling on that soon, are they not?
Yeah.
So they'll have to rule that one, then it'll take them another year to rule on this one.
I not have any confidence that the NFL will actually get to the bottom of this. But I will say, what like Ezekiel Elliott and the TMZ did report that like he punched somebody in the face, and that's how they fell to the ground, because the video showed somebody on the ground. Didn't exactly show how that person got to the ground. Now, you got worried for Dallas a little bit, right, about him? Like, there was, you mentioned the domestic violence incident that may or may not have happened before he got into the NFL. There was that thing of him on the float, was it?
Yeah,
like St. Patrick's
float.
Day?
Yep, you forgot one, him in the pot shop in Seattle in the preseason.
Yeah, which...
What happened on the float?
He ripped a woman's top off.
He exposed a woman, yeah, on a St. Patrick's float.
Yeah. So you don't want to do that. You know, she clearly had a few, and he clearly had a few, but you can't do that. Like, you definitely can't do that. And now you have this, and you get concerned. In the NFL, like, I'd be surprised if he isn't suspended for the first couple of games of the year, and he has to learn from Le'Veon Bell how to have a season where you get suspended the first couple of games and still be productive the rest of the games. The real thing is, what do you do in fantasy football if the NFL doesn't make anything clear a month from now when you have your draft?
Don't
you
him.
Still take him.
Well, you guys had different opinions there. Y'all need to iron this thing out.
If you treat it as a bye week.
Your Ohio State bias getting in the way
I think that if he did something, he should be suspended. I am not a Cowboys apologist. Yes, Buckeyes, but he doesn't play for the Buckeyes anymore.
Well, you can draft him, JP.
I would draft
There's
him.
There's a work fantasy football league. I believe you're in it, JP.
I believe I am the defending champion, Fish.
You are. And
I
guess,
took your money.
Guess who plays in week one? It is me versus you, and I hope you have to sit there with Ezekiel Elliott on a bye week.
Y'all have the schedule?
Really? Yeah, the schedule's already made. It's me and you week one. I don't know how they already have it made, but yeah.
No.
Yeah?
I don't think so. All right, I'll draft Ezekiel Elliott. Well, the ACC released their preseason media poll today. They picked a Florida State Miami title game. That would be a good one, right?
Are we living in the 90s?
Well, that'd be awesome.
Did I miss something?
You need to get a little throwback there. Virginia, who Boise State will host Friday, September 22nd, was picked at the bottom of the Coastal Division.
Yeah, nobody is thinking that Virginia is any good. Like, it's funny that we're going through Boise State's schedule and I believe they're
the worst team in the ACC.
Yeah, we're talking about, like, oh, look how tough their schedule is at the beginning of the year, how they have Washington State, how they have San Diego State, how they have BYU, and even Troy at the beginning of the year. Those are really good teams. Virginia's in that stretch, and nobody's looking at them.
I believe last week on this show, Prater said of the first six games, Virginia's the only guaranteed win.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a Power 5 school.
That's the thing. Like, their schedule is so tough. Virginia, the team out of the ACC, is your layup. The rest of those games are difficult. Like, New Mexico is the other team in the first six. Like, even New Mexico could come up with something that I think could hurt Boise State with their option a lot more than what Virginia could do. Maybe we've gotten to the point where we're arrogant here with Boise State. And
no, I don't think
we
so.
Could walk, like, the gotten to the point where we can just, like, look at a power conference ACC team and say, yo, that's just not at our level.
I feel like everyone looks at Virginia like that, though.
I'm with you.
They haven't always been bad, though.
No, not always. Yeah, recently, as in like the last 5 years, they had decent years in the ACC. Now, if they're the worst team in the ACC, that means Syracuse isn't, so I'm happy.
Does Bronco Mendenhall regret that decision yet?
No, he's cashing checks, Fish.
Babe.
Houston Texans third-round draft pick Deontay Foreman was arrested Sunday morning. He faces a charge of firearm and marijuana possession. He went to the old... It wasn't my marijuana excuse.
Right. To Stephen A. Smith, lay off the weed.
He says he was in possession of the firearm, but legally. And he said he would submit to a drug test if necessary to prove that he hasn't been violating the NFL's substance abuse policy.
But it's funny, like, actually having possession of the marijuana is what the crime is.
Like, well, true, yeah.
Drug
test
is a
good point. That's a good point.
Like, that's the crime in this. Like, they a lot of people smoke marijuana.
It.
Like, you know, that happens. But the legal part is, like, when you're, you know, driving in possession of
but
it
wasn't
and they pull
his.
You over.
How could he possess it if it wasn't his, Chris?
I mean, possession's 9/10 of the law. Like, if you have an interception, you just took away possession. It's technically not your ball until after the play, but you have possession. See? I've turned
maybe,
it into a football analogy.
Maybe you should have explained it to him like that. He would probably understand. He'd be like, oh, it makes sense. Yeah, it was mine. You're right.
I was holding it for a guy.
Stop it. Hey, that's worse, man. Well, how many people got arrested trying to make a drop? It wasn't mine. It was just in my car and I was making the drop. You're not allowed to make the drop, man. That's illegal. Stop doing it.
That's true. They weren't. He's not charged with smoking it. He's charged with having it.
Exactly.
Good point. Well, Topps is publishing a retro series of trading cards. We're not going back to, like, the 1976 Big Red Machine or anything like that. It's not athletes, but media personalities. And, Chris, you can get your Stephen A. Smith trading card. He'll be one of those featured, along with Paul Feinbaum, Jay Glazer, Ali LaForce, Sage Steele, Tom Rinaldi, and some former ESPNers like Andy Katz and Jason Stark.
All right, let's rank. All right, can you read them? I'm going to rank these.
Stephen A. Smith.
All right, Stephen A.
Paul Feinbaum, Ali LaForce, Sage Steele, Ken Rosenthal.
LaForce, Steele.
Rosenthal, Rinaldi, Katz, and Stark.
Wow, that's a lot.
Are they autographed by chance?
I doubt it.
All right, I'm definitely going the most valuable one is Stephen A. Smith.
No,
if it's
no.
a throwback. I want a Stephen A. Smith throwback from when he was a writer with the Philadelphia Inquirer.
No.
And then Ali LaForce is number two.
It's a picture of, like, he looks right now.
Okay, Ali LaForce is definitely near the top, though. I agree. She's really good at her job, and, you know, it's nice to have a card of her.
Two Ali LaForce, or you'd have to trade me two Stephen A. Smiths to get one Ali LaForce.
Where does Andy Katz, what does it say his affiliation is?
Did he get laid off? Yeah, I don't know. Former ESPNer.
Exactly.
That's what the story called him, a former ESPNer.
Andy Katz is really good, too. I think... Who's at the bottom?
Are they going to actually, do you think these will sell?
The Stephen A. Smith ones will sell, yeah.
Well, they'll come in a package, won't they?
Well, everyone's going to hunt for the Stephen A. ones. You're going to have the people who cherish it, and then we're going to have people who burn it.
I mean, there's only like eight, so it's going to be a package. You're going to get like all eight of them, aren't you?
Is the Ken Rosenthal card smaller than all the other ones?
I don't know.
Can I buy these at Fred Meyer, JP?
I don't know where you can get these.
You're just asking Target? A bunch of questions that he doesn't know.
Yeah.
Probably Target. I'm just telling you that there's trading cards coming out. Right, it's up to you to find
out
where to
buy them. I'm going to put Allie LaForce ones on your desk. Just put a bunch
yes.
of them.
Yes. I will take that.
It makes his day a lot better, trust me. KTIK is a proud sponsor of Finals Night, Saturday, July 22nd, at the Snake River Stampede at the Ford Idaho Center in Nampa. Tickets on sale now at ictickets.com. Get more info at snakeriverstampede.com. Up next, we have the final four of the, what is it, Chris's birthday bracket of ballers?
Big ballers.
Okay, because you want to turn it to LeVar Ball, of course. We got to pick it. Who's the most dominant athlete of my 26 years of watching sports? Next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. The birthday edition. And this segment on the birthday edition, my birthday, of Idaho Sports Talk, sponsored by Pro Ram Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, accessories. Located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. So no Bob Beeler today. Michael Fisher is hanging out. JP producing. And since it's my birthday, Roger Federer won something again close to my birthday. It seems like that happens darn near every single year. Typically, the British Open has fallen around my birthday time, too. So we've had a lot of Tiger Woods winning right around my birthday.
So who's your pick for this one? Who are you putting the birthday luck on? I've got to do the draft tonight. I need to make sure I beat JP back down into his place. He's getting a little more arrogant now that the British Open's coming up.
What's Rory McIlroy up to?
Nothing. Losing mainly. But
yeah, okay, why can't Rory win this?
He can. Is that your pick? All right, I'll put Rory on the big board with a little star that says the Chris birthday special.
Yeah, he won one of these once, right?
Yeah.
I remember him winning one of these British Opens. He should win this. I feel like I don't know what the course is or how it plays to his style of play, but I got that feeling.
It doesn't take a golf expert to become a golf expert. I proved that last time.
Brooks Koepka, and I made fun of you, so where does it say on my list? Chris's birthday bracket of ballers.
We had
eight. It's not big ballers because no LeVar Ball is any part of this. No Lonzo on the list because in 26 years of watching sports, we've had a lot of dominant figures. I had Federer, Mayweather, Brady, Bonds, LeBron, Tiger, Serena, and Gino Auriemma.
We had a call audible on that last one.
A bracket
there.
Of eight. Gino Auriemma got scratched because Fish didn't want him to be on there.
He wasn't even the best coach of the last decade.
I mean, he's pretty dominant in terms of winning streaks and championships, except last year.
Yeah.
Mississippi State, out of nowhere, was able to take them down. So you replaced him with Roger Clemens. Which I could see. He's the best pitcher. We already have a hitter in Barry Bonds. Roger Clemens, the most dominant pitcher. And clearly steroids aren't a factor in our bracket because Barry Bonds did do what he did.
We should just say cheating's not a factor because Brady's in there as well.
Okay. Brady's level of cheating, we don't think rises to the level of Barry Bonds' level of cheating. At least I don't. So we had Federer versus Mayweather. Roger Federer won that. Brady versus Bonds. I voted for Bonds, but I was overruled 2-1. And Tom Brady ended up winning that. So how about Tom Brady versus Roger Federer when we're talking dominance? Of course, Federer won his 18th, make it 19th Grand Slam, 8th Wimbledon. Tom Brady out here winning a bunch of MVPs in the Super Bowl, 4 of them, winning the Super Bowl 5 times, 12-time Pro Bowler, 2-time First Team All-Pro, a couple of times Offensive Player of the Year. He's led the league in touchdown passes 4 times.
So this is the one I struggle with the most. And I almost sort of picked my winner based on who they're going to face in the next round in the final. I'm going to have to go Tom Brady. And if Tom Brady doesn't win the Super Bowl, I would have said this is Roger Federer, no doubt. But as we said, Roger Federer didn't drop a set in Wimbledon. Tom Brady, he was down 2 sets to love. And the other player was on match point, basically. And he came back and won in the last Super Bowl. So I have to say Brady gets the win here.
Because of degree of difficulty, putting himself in an adverse situation and then overcoming it.
And 5 Super Bowls, and he won when he was 40.
As if Roger Federer has never been in an adverse situation in all of his Grand Slam championships, and just because in this one he happened to win every single set doesn't mean that he doesn't have the comeback ability. He's shown he can do everything. I'm going to say, because I didn't even have Tom Brady in this spot, because I had Barry Bonds in this spot. So I'm going to go Roger Federer beating Tom Brady because there is a comp for Brady, and it's Manning. Same era, similar stats.
There's Nadal.
Nadal is not, unless it's the French Open, Nadal does not, and Nadal's, I think, won them all, but that definitely not the same level, not the same frequency as Roger Federer. Now, when it comes to the French Open, if I was just going to say the French Open is the masters of everything and only the French Open matters, then I would knock off Federer and probably put up Nadal. But when those two head-to-head, Federer is in a different class when it comes to overall accomplishments. So, Roger Federer for me over Brady, which means we need a tie break. JP, you got time to do this? I know you're busy over there. You got the 3-6 show coming up.
Who was it? Federer and who?
Brady.
Oh, Tom Brady.
Really?
Brady getting carried by JP.
Tom Brady's out here.
Although I don't believe that Roger Federer ever cheated. I'm gonna change that. I'm going to go Federer.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Tom
Brady's the honorable. Now, There's been point shaving scandals in tennis, but there's never really been that many cheating
scandals.
No,
I think that Roger Federer's got a pretty clean reputation.
All right, there you go for the guy from Switzerland. He's in the championship. LeBron versus Serena Williams is the bottom of this bracket. LeBron James, 3-time champion. Serena Williams completely owning women's tennis over the last 20 years.
There's a simple argument for this. One of them couldn't play through cramps. One of them won a title while carrying another human. That's all I need to say. It's Serena Williams by a mile.
You know what? I was leaning LeBron. I think your argument sold me. Like, you're right. LeBron did struggle with the cramps. Serena was pregnant.
And didn't drop a set.
Apparently, she said, like, if they ever had to go to a third set, she'd be drained and couldn't do it. So she knew she had to win all of these in two sets. And she was able to do that. Even if you just like take the jokes out of this and just look at the level that she was able to win at, like Australian Open, 03, 05, 07, 09, 2010, 2015, 2017. And women's tennis, by the way, where you don't have these long runs, French Open, 02, 13, 15. Wimbledon, 02, 03, 09, 2010, 2012, 2015, 2016. US Open, 99. 2002, 2008, 2012, 2014, 2014. I'm sorry. I mean, that's when it comes to the most dominant, like LeBron's run isn't that.
No.
So.
And he can't deal with cramps.
So we got two tennis people in the final. That's weird.
See, we don't want to ask John McEnroe what would happen here.
True. Good call.
So I
said face each other.
I would have to go with Serena, and I'm going to use your Federer argument against you because you said he's so much better than Nadal. Nadal, 23-14 all-time against Federer. If your rival's better than you head-to-head, I'm sorry. You can't be the most dominant against anyone else if your rival beats you.
A lot of those meanings on clay. And you're
9-3 in all-time Grand Slam.
There you go. So if that head-to-head will make the difference, does Serena have a losing record over anybody?
Not that I know of, no.
Exactly. I don't think so either. Doesn't do the in-depth research there for Serena's record against everybody, but she kills Maria Sharapova every single time. They try to build up Sharapova as a Serena rival. I know for a fact that Serena kills Sharapova darn near every time. So Serena Williams, most dominant athlete the last 26 years.
We did get a text from Postal Grandpa. He says, happy birthday, Chris. His son shares the same birthday as you. He said, enjoy your last day on your parents' insurance plan.
Good point. There you go. Got to get my own a little bit. So, shout out, Postal Grandpa. Thank you. Been a great birthday. Spending it with you, Fish. We got Jeff Kays over there with the 3-6 Idaho Sports Talk. I wonder who his loser co-host is today.
You're calling yourself a loser? That's a self-esteem issue.
There
man.
You go. Yeah, I was just setting it up.
I thought it was going to be me the way you were describing
it. Setting
them,
it up. But...
No, now that's a cutdown. I don't want to go down the MMA boxing press conference style, but we will talk about Mr. Today, Mr. Lewis, Mr. Yesterday, myself. I don't know where that puts you, Mr. Gleam in the Eye, perhaps.
Fish? I was going with Mr. Future, but...
You are Mr. Future. I would like to have your liver. we'll be talking about a lot of different issues, so just hang in there.
All right, we'll do it. 3-6. I get to keep my chair. You're the one who has to leave.
Finally.
Jeff Kays taking over. Get the podcast up, please.
Podcast will be up. Everyone talk about Madden. We'll have it up 3:30.
Cool, cool. More Idaho Sports Talk coming up next. Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.